Good morning, Grace Hill. My name is Alan Simonton, and I'm on staff here at Grace Hill Community Church. I just want to thank Pastor Michael for just allowing me to come up here and speak this week, and hopefully this is a message that speaks to you, and it kind of helps maybe, I don't know, make some life change and some progress in some areas in your life. So today's message is called Guardrails Once and For All. So if everybody can say, once and for all. Have you ever said that? Once and for all. That's it. All right. So that's what it's called. Very good. Very good. So this is from a sermon series that God used to really challenge me. And essentially what we're going to do today is taking the idea of a guardrail and building a spiritual principle out of it. So here's what a guardrail is. A guardrail is a system designed to keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. We all know what a guardrail is. The guardrail is actually placed in an area that's safe to keep us from going into places that are unsafe to drive. A guardrail is always placed a few feet or a few yards away from the area of danger. Guardrails are designed to cause a little bit of damage in order to keep you from experiencing a lot of damage. We all know that on the other side of guardrails are places that we shouldn't go. Now let me ask you this question. What would it look like to create or to establish guardrails in our lives? What would it look like to have financial guardrails or moral guardrails? What would it look like to have guardrails that help us with our friendships or our marriage, academic, professional, just any area of your life? What if we were to establish some guardrails that kept us back from the edge of disaster, whatever that might be? So here's a definition of guardrails that we can use. A guardrail is a standard of behavior or a standard of personal behavior, which means this is something that you make up yourself. A standard or personal behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. And the matter of conscience part is a little tricky. The idea that you would create a standard, you would say, in this area of my life, this is as far as I'm going to go. And you would make that decision so personal that when you violated it or began to violate your own personal standard, your conscience would light up and say, warning, warning, warning. You're veering off and you're moving towards something dangerous. A personal standard of behavior that nobody else may subscribe to. A personal standard of behavior that's your own personal standard, but you're so committed to it that you actually feel guilty because your conscience lights up. You actually feel guilty when you begin to violate your personal standard. The idea being to create some guardrails that keep us away from disaster. Something that's never going to change is that our culture baits us to the edge of disaster in several areas and then mocks us once we step over certain lines. Our culture baits us to the edge of disaster financially. We see commercials and hear things, oh no, buy now, buy now, buy now, zero down. You can make payments on it for the rest of your life. It's going to be great. And then you get yourself in a lot of debt, and then culture goes, uh-oh, look at you. You're pretty irresponsible. Look at that consumer debt. And all that credit card debt. It's like, wait a minute. I just did what you told me to do. That's our culture, right? Culture baits us to the edge of disaster morally, relationally, in our marriages. And we step over certain lines and people are going, oh, you're gross or you're just disgusting. So the question is, how do you manage that? What if we establish some guardrails? Michelle and I, my wife, we had a pretty hard lesson early on in our marriage with consumer debt. We were spenders and we wanted shiny new things and we couldn't really afford, and we racked up some serious debt. We were living beyond our means. And the lack of guardrails in that area in our lives resulted in a car repossession, credit card bills that, man, and debt that followed us for a long, long time. It was hard. It was a hard lesson. But after we began to put up guardrails, we now carry very little debt, and we're investing in our future. There are a couple of tracks to look at this whole guardrail thing, a couple of different paths you could take concerning guardrails in your life. One is, this just makes common sense. That in order to keep from screwing up our lives in just about any area you could think of, we need some guardrails. Something to keep us back from the brink of disaster. That's one track. The other is this. I'm not going to do this. I don't want to do this. And there's something in you and me that says, okay, I understand, but the problem with the guardrail is it keeps me away from something I want. I don't want to be a good example. I just want to make more money. I don't want to give. I want to buy. I don't want to be wise and prudent. I want to date her. I want to date him. I don't want to be fiscally responsible. I want at least that. I don't want to study. I want an A. And there's ways to get A's without studying. You may be saying that makes sense and all, Alan, but the problem with guardrails is they're actually just in my way. It gets between me and what I want. You see, when it comes to you and me, the whole idea of stepping back and evaluating means we're putting things between where we are and where we shouldn't be. And then you may say, well, I'm not quite having as much fun as I possibly could, or that I'm as close to sin as I could possibly get, but with actually sinning. So you see, I'm actually leaving some stuff on the table. I'm leaving some stuff out there, some experiences unexplored. And honestly, you may be saying, Alan, this is all great, but I'm just not going to do it. If you've had those thoughts, or if you're already kind of wandering in that direction, I want to point you to two things you already know. I want to talk about a couple of things that you already know, and then I want to tell you a story from the Bible. Is that cool? Awesome. Here it is. If you decide, well, I'm missing out on way too much, I'd rather live on the edge, I'd rather live life dangerously, or however you view that, here's the thing that you need to know. Regardless, whether you have guardrails or not, the tension that you feel, is not going away. Let me explain that. You see, if you decide, for example, I know financial responsibility and debt and all that stuff, but I'm going to lease a car that I can't afford anyway, you decide that. If you decide to lease a car you can't afford anyway, that tension is not going away when you lease the car you can't afford. Let me try a different way. If you decide, I'm married, and I know there are rules and social things, but I'm going to go out with her anyway. I'm going to have a girlfriend on the side. If you decide as a married guy to have a girlfriend on the side, that's not going to take away the temptation to have a girlfriend on the side. You will still be tempted to have one, and once she's gone, you're still going to be tempted. It doesn't solve anything. So here's what happens, because all of us agree out there somewhere, morally, financially, relationally, professionally, all of us agree out there somewhere there's some lines we probably shouldn't cross. We may not all agree on what they are, but we all agree, okay, a person really shouldn't do that. A single person really shouldn't do that. A married person really shouldn't do that. A student shouldn't do that. There are lines out there. Here's the problem. Wherever you decide to put the brakes on, and this is important, wherever you decide to put the brakes on, that will be the point of tension you experience. That's where your temptation begins. Your temptation begins wherever you decide to put the brakes on. The temptation is never going away. The tension is never going away. If you decide, forget this diet I've been on, I'm just going to eat whatever I want to eat, well, at some point, you're going to say, well, I probably shouldn't eat that. Well, now you have a new point of tension. The temptation doesn't go away, and refusing to have guardrails does not eliminate the tension, does not eliminate the temptation. All it does is erode your resolve, and all it does is bring you to a place of temptation that if you were to give in, the consequences would be greater. How about this for a guardrail? This is a suggestion. It's not necessarily in the Bible, but what if we said that married people, shouldn't have meals alone with other married people who aren't their spouse? It's sort of a guardrail. So if you decide, I'm not going to have coffee with another woman other than my wife, that's my guardrail, and I go, but I really want to have coffee with her. I really want to have coffee with her. Struggle. I really want to have coffee. Well, I'm just going to have coffee with her. Well, what's happened? I've had coffee with her. It's not the end of the world. But what if that's not your guardrail? What if it's, well, I'm not going to have dinner with him. I really want to have dinner with him. I'm just going to have dinner with him. What have you done? Nothing. You've had dinner with him, no big deal, right? But what if it's, I really shouldn't go in. I want to go in, but I really shouldn't go in. She's inviting me in, but I shouldn't. It's a little different, isn't it? See, the tension's not going away. How about this? Okay, we're in. Okay, I shouldn't go upstairs. She wants me to go upstairs. You see my point? So then what? Point is this, and this is true academically, professionally, morally. It applies everywhere. At some point, you're going to put a foot on the brake, and when you do, that's where the temptation and that's where the tension begins. But the further you are in on some things, the more complicated the consequences. If you say yes, and the more... If you keep saying yes, 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 the more difficult it is to say no. So refusing to have guardrails doesn't solve anything. It just moves the battle line a little bit closer to disaster. Let me say it a different way. Your appetites are never fully and finally satisfied. In other words, you've never had the meal to end all meals. You've never had the dessert to end all desserts. You never purchased the car to end all car purchases. You've never had a kiss to end all kisses. There's no appetite that is fully and finally satisfied. In fact, the more you feed an appetite, you may know this, the more you feed an appetite, guess what? It grows. So here's the deal. Whatever area we're talking about, financially, the shopping thing, the debt thing, whatever it is, relationships with people you shouldn't spend time with, alcohol, recreational drugs, you just pick an area. The point is this, every time you feed an appetite, it's never fully and finally satisfied. It comes back and it wants more. That's never going to change in your life. Well, if that's the case, then what does wisdom say? What does common sense say? If moving closer and closer and closer to lines that spell disaster only feeds an appetite, the thing with a guardrail is not only do you just draw a different line of temptation, a different line of tension, you draw it far back enough to where the appetite is far more manageable because appetites are never fully and finally satisfied. So if you decide the problem with the guardrails, it keeps me from good things, keeps me from having fun, it's going to be so weird. My friends aren't going to understand. It's so extreme. I understand that. I do. All I'm saying is this. Don't deceive yourself. Don't deceive yourself into thinking that by saying yes, 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 you'll never have to say no because you decide it's your life wherever you say no. That's where your temptation begins. All I'm saying to you is that the further back you stay from certain lines, the easier it is to resist, and you win. I like winning. Now I want to tell you a story. 605 BC is where this story happens, and it involves the king you may have heard of named Nebuchadnezzar. Really cool name. Who was located, it's in modern-day Iraq, in 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar decided to conquer Israel, specifically the city of Jerusalem. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was a brilliant, brilliant dude. And here's one thing that made him so brilliant. When he would go into a major metropolitan ancient city, instead of just destroying the city and enslaving everybody, he gave his commanders these instructions. He said, go into the city and arrest and take captive all of the royal family, the best and the brightest, because the royal family was usually the most educated. The royal family was generally the prettiest, and the royal family was generally the people who had eaten well, had taken care of themselves, and had been taken care of. Go into the city and take as captives the best and the brightest and bring them safely back to my capital city, Babylon. And so Nebuchadnezzar had the habit of importing the prettiest people in the world and the smartest people in the world into his capital city. Then he would put them in a training program, and he would slowly but surely strip away all of their culture and replace it with Babylonian culture. So his capital city of Babylon, back in this period of ancient history, was a magnificent city. It's full of brilliant people, the brightest scholars in the world, and the prettiest people, because he would destroy their cities, try to destroy their civilizations, but he would import the best and brightest, recreate a culture within them, change their worldview, okay, and in some cases, send them back out to export Babylonian culture. It was brilliant. So in 605 BC, he sends his armies in the city of Jerusalem, conquers Jerusalem, goes into the temple, the ancient temple that Solomon had built, pretty much destroys the temple and loots it, takes all the things that are valuable, and brings them to Babylon. He enriches himself with Israel's gold, and he brings with him Israel's best and brightest. And four of these people that he brought with him are very famous people that you've probably heard of. Daniel is one of them. The other one is... other three are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were part of his entourage that he captured and brought to the city of Babylon. So he gets these guys with all these other people from all over the world, and he begins this training process. And the goal, again, is to strip away their heritage and all of their belief systems and create new Babylonians that, again, are the brightest people in the world. So here's how the story begins. It's in the book of Daniel. It's the Old Testament, Daniel 1:5. It's in your program. It's a little condensed in the program. If you want to open your Bibles, it'll also be up on the screen. So Daniel 1:5 says, "The king," that's Nebuchadnezzar, as a part of his training program, "assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years. This was graduate school. This was, you thought you were smart before. You're getting ready to get your PhD, your master's degree. We're going to give you a 3-year free, all paid college education with food allowance that comes right off the king's table." In other words, most of the captives who found themselves in this program, they're like high-fiving each other. They're like, "Yeah, this is awesome. You mean I don't have to die in the desert like the rest of my family did? We thought we were going to have to go to the copper mines. We're going to live in the palace, eat the king's food, and they're going to educate us? This is unbelievable." They were excited. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after, they were to enter into the king's service. So after they finished the 3-year program, they would have an oral exam, and the best and the brightest of the group would actually get to work for the king and live in the palace. This is pretty much as good as it could possibly get in the ancient world. But Daniel, who was one of these smart guys, he was so smart, he saw through the whole plan. He saw the end game. And he realized what was about to happen. Because once they rescued his life, they gave him a new set of clothes. They shaved his head. They pierced his ear. They gave him a new name. Daniel realized what was happening, that slowly they were going to begin and continue to strip away everything, everything he knew, everything he placed his faith in. And one day he would wake up and he would be Babylonian through and through, worshiping Babylonian gods, taking part in Babylonian ceremonies, and having put in his past everything he grew up believing was true. And he realized they were going to do this very, very slowly over time. Daniel recognized something that many of us completely miss when it comes to the ebb and flow of culture. Check this out. Here's what he knew that we miss. that compromise does not erase the tension. It only weakens our resolve. Compromise does not erase the tension. We think, oh, if I give in, I won't have that tension anymore. Oh, if I give in, I won't have that temptation anymore. If I give in, I won't have that pressure anymore. Daniel knew better than that. That compromise does not erase the tension. It only weakens our resolve. If you cheat once, it's way easier to cheat a second time. Once you cross certain lines of debt and compounding debt, it's just easier to take on more debt. Once you compromise with alcohol or recreational drugs, it's just easier the second time. Come on, that second cigarette is way easier than the first cigarette. There's so many lines that once you cross them, the tension doesn't go away. It's just that your resolve is lessened. Daniel saw this and he realized, they've changed my clothes, they've changed my name, they've changed my habits, and they've changed my schedule. I realize where this is going. One day I will have to completely abandon everything I held near and dear. And so Daniel decided to do something that I want to encourage all of us to do. Here's what Scripture tells us. Verse 8. But Daniel resolved. Daniel made up his mind, enough is enough. That's as far as I go. That's as close as I get. That's as far as you're going to be able to push me. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission to not defile himself in this way. There's a lot of speculation about why Daniel didn't want to eat the food or drink the wine. One is that the wine and food had been offered to one or more of Babylonian gods. To eat this food would to be acknowledging that those gods exist. So by eating it, you know, he would basically be worshiping pagan idols. And that may be one reason. Another explanation is that he's Jewish, and he didn't know if the food was kosher, and he knew that if he ate it, it would be violating the teachings of Moses, the Mosaic Law, and so he didn't want to eat it. But what we do know is that he decided, says, you can push me, and you can push me, but this is far as I go. And this is a challenge for you and me. Daniel made up his mind before he knew how his story ended. Daniel made up his mind, and he hadn't even read the book of Daniel. And see, this is the part that we can't even begin to imagine, because we've never been in this environment. He's a teenager away from home, surrounded by the most powerful people in the world. By saying no, he's essentially going to lose his life. Here's the amazing thing. He uses the word defile. Can you imagine what an insult to the host that might have been? Can you imagine how insulting? To eat your king's food is to defile my body. Like, whoa, hold on. Don't you know that there are some people in the city who don't even have anything to eat, Daniel? We're offering you the best there is, and you think it's going to defile your body? Well, aren't you somebody special? This was a total insult to Nebuchadnezzar and his entire household. So Daniel made the decision before he knew the end of his story. But let me tell you why he made the decision before he knew the end of the story. Because he could predict the end of his story if he didn't. He made it because he could see what was happening. Because like you and me, he knew where this was leading, and he made up his mind. So he asked the chief official for permission. Here's what he did. He went to Ashpenaz. That's the chief official. He said, Ashpenaz, look, me and the fellas, we don't want to eat this food and drink the wine, and I know this is going to be a problem, but we just don't want to do it. Now look at this next verse. This is kind of a game changer here. Daniel 1:9 says, Now God. Now here's why this is important. As you're evaluating your guardrails and you're asking yourself, am I going to do this? I'm going to miss out. People are going to think I'm crazy. The guys at work aren't going to understand this. They'll say things like, but you always did this before. Wait, you're not going to go there anymore? All that kind of stuff is going to go through your mind. Here's the part that we forget to factor in. And here's the part that somehow Daniel knew to factor in. It's called the now God part. The now God part is that God will use your guardrails to not simply protect you, but to direct you. Because what happens from this point on in the story, because of Daniel's resolve, because he made up his mind, his decision to kind of draw a line in the sand was the thing was that God used to direct his entire life. If he had not made this decision, we wouldn't be telling this story. There would be a missing book of the Bible called Daniel. It wouldn't be there. Everything, more than you can possibly imagine, hung or hinged on his decision whether or not to eat the meat and drink the wine. The fact that he said no, God said, this is a defining moment. I'm going to direct your entire future by this decision. And do you know what I've discovered in my own life? Is that God has become the most real to me. And I felt the clearest direction in my life in a moment of temptation, a moment of trial, a moment of tension where I decided in this area of my life, this is where I draw the line. This is as far as I'm going to go. And I look back and see the decision to put up guardrails. God used to completely redirect my life. I look back and I wasn't trying to make a directional decision. I was really just trying to make an ethical and moral decision. And God used that decision not only to protect me, but to direct me. So can I be just vulnerable for a minute? I kind of feel like we're all family here, right? Yeah, so I just kind of tell a little bit of my story. I'd like to share something that's very personal with y'all. It's a big part of my story that God used to direct my life is that several years ago, I gave up alcohol. I have a very habitual kind of all or nothing type personality. You can ask Michael. It's like I'm in it. And when I'm in something, I really go all in. So to say the least, I was really good at drinking. To be accurate, I was an alcoholic. It was destroying my life, my family, my marriage, my job. You see, I wasn't putting up guardrails in this area of temptation. And even after I had accepted Jesus and was attending church and going to small group and regular prayer meetings, I was still struggling with this. Well, it was during one of those prayer meetings that I heard from God. It was one of those rare moments that it was his voice telling me, after a long time of me just begging God, just take this from me, take this from me, you know, take it from me, deliver me from this. He said to me, what are you going to do about it? You see, I hadn't been doing anything to keep away from alcohol. I hadn't been reaching out for any help. I hadn't been putting up any guardrails. So I decided in that moment to step up to the altar. And I confessed my sin to a complete stranger. I didn't know the guy. He was just standing there, and I just confessed it to him. And as he prayed over me, I felt this heaviness, this burden of sin just lift off of me. And I began in that moment to put up guardrails. I turned from it, and I've never looked back. It wasn't easy by any means. But I was ready to step into the best that God had for me. But I had no idea what that would become. James 1:2 says this, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. That is a weird statement to me. When problems are coming my way, why should I consider it pure joy? It says this, For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. Any runners out there know that you don't start out running a marathon, you start out slowly. When troubles come your way, consider an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, check this out, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. Daniel had no idea what hung in the balance of his decision. And something that I know about you for sure is that you have no idea what's hanging in the balance of your decision to establish guardrails for your life. You think you do, but you don't. And my hunch is that for many of you, that decision, whether it's how you work, how you lead your family, whether it's a money thing, the decision for many of you will be a defining moment. And you will look back and say, God didn't just simply protect me, because guardrails are about protection. I feel like God directed or redirected my entire life because I made up my mind. Daniel 1:9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. Here's the thing, Daniel didn't know this. Ashpenaz, the guy in charge of them, is kind of treating these guys special. And he didn't know that God had done something behind the scenes, just like you don't know what God is going to do behind the scenes. And so he goes to Ashpenaz, he says, look, me and my guys, we don't want to eat this stuff, we don't want to drink this wine. Ashpenaz says, okay, here's the problem. I can't give you an out on this. I can't let you off the hook. You've got to eat the meat, drink the wine. I understand your conviction, but if you change your diet and then your health fails, well, guess what? This king is going to have my head. I'll be responsible. I'm responsible for your health. And I know that young men do better if they eat a lot of meat and drink a lot of the king's wine. So I can't change my mind as much as I like you guys. However, the Bible doesn't tell us this part, but apparently there's some sort of like wink-wink deal going on here. He said, look over there. It says, see your security guard over there? Maybe you can work it out with him, wink-wink. So Daniel and his guys, they go to the security guard and they say, we've talked to Ashpenaz. And he said no, but he thought maybe you would be cool with us changing the menu. And so the security guard and Daniel, they came up with a deal. Daniel says, look, give us 10 days. Just let us not eat the meat and drink the wine for 10 days. Just give us 10 days. If our health has deteriorated, then we'll talk. Somehow, Ashpenaz and security guard, they work it out, and after 10 days, they're healthier than the rest of the guys. They're smarter than the rest of the people. Here's how the story ends, and maybe you know this part, verse 17. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. God honored this decision. And here's the conclusion. Verse 19. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. None equal. Powerful. And this was the beginning of a journey that would end up making all kinds of difference in the nation of Israel. The book of Daniel, the lion's den thing, the fiery furnace. Y'all know these stories. It all began with this amazing story that happened with Nebuchadnezzar. It all started right here, with a simple decision to say, you know what? Can't stretch any further. That's as far as I go. I'm going to make up my mind before I know the end of my story. Because if I don't make up my mind, I have a feeling I know the end of my story. Now here's the challenge for you and I. You've got to make up your mind to do this. And to refuse to establish guardrails, it's not going to remove the tension. It's just going to erode your ability to say no. You already know that. You've just got to make up your mind. You've got to make up your mind before you know the end of your story. Because if you don't, you can kind of predict in some areas of your life, can't you? The end of your story. Because your marriage is moving in a bad direction, or your finances are moving in a bad direction, or the relationship with your kids is moving in a bad direction, because you won't draw a line. At some point, as you predict your own future, and for many of you, it's not that difficult. It really comes down to, are you going to make up your mind? Let me just go ahead and tell you that culture is not going to help you. Culture is going to continue to bait you in the wrong direction. You've got to resolve in your own heart. You cut my hair, you give me new sandals, you teach me a new language, but that's as far as I go. Because not having guardrails doesn't remove that tension. It doesn't. It just removes the lines to where the tension is going to be. And check out this verse. I want to share this verse from Proverbs. This verse kind of summarizes it all. Check this out. Solomon said, Proverbs 11:3 says, "The integrity," that's to do the right thing, right? Integrity is to do the right thing. "Of the upright," the people who are trying to do the right thing, "the integrity of the upright guides them." Again, you have no idea what God wants to do with and through you. You don't. And see, when I look at you, I think, wow, look at their potential. She's a junior in high school. Oh my gosh, she has another year of high school. I wonder what God would do with her. Wow, he's brand new in the company. I wonder what God would do with him if he walked in with a different set of standards that everybody kind of talked about him behind his back. Now he's in a perfect position to be used by God. I look at you and I go, wow, what might God do? But I'm telling you, you'll never know. You'll never know until you do what Daniel did and make up your mind. God will use that ethical and moral decision to direct possibly your entire life. But you've got to make up your mind. Do you agree that some, if not all, of your greatest regrets would have been avoided if you had guardrails? You know what that means? That means future regrets can be avoided altogether if you establish some guardrails. But if it really comes down to this, you've got to make up your mind. Like Daniel, you have to resolve in your heart. That's it for me, regardless of what everybody else says. I want that for y'all so much, so much. I know that some of you, it seems extreme, as common sense as it sounds when I'm talking about it, but when you go home and start trying to figure out in your own life, it seems just so extreme. But I believe with all my heart, God will honor those decisions. And God will establish you and your crazy mixed up industry and your crazy mixed up culture and your neighborhood and with your friends. God will establish you as the person through whom he will use in those crazy mixed up environments. Just like he did with Daniel. But you've got to make up your mind and refuse to be deceived by the lie that by refusing to make up your mind, somehow the tension and the temptation is going away. Today in your program, there's some discussion questions. Take these home, talk about them. If you're going to lunch after church with some friends, pull them out during lunch. Talk about them. Just know this, that the only thing that goes away without guardrails, the only thing that goes away without guardrails is your resolve. And on the other side of those decisions, your life just gets more complicated. So my prayer for you is that you make up your mind. Let's pray. God, help us to put up guardrails in our lives to protect us so that you can direct us. Lord, help us to change our lives, to move in a direction towards you. Help us to make up our minds today. In Jesus' name, amen.